this week on COVID, Race, and Democracy.
They tried to eradicate us, remove us, and wipe us out.
The National Day of Mourning is held on the fourth Thursday each year in November. It's also known as the historical myth Thanksgiving.
3 hours of agonizing argument, agonizing questions where they don't understand the basic concept that we have inherent sovereignty and we have inherent rights to the future of every single Native child born into this generation.
We'll hear from supporters of the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, rallying around the U.S. Supreme Court.
We just did lay back and wait for the white man to take care of us. We had to go out and survive, and so we're still doing that today. And everybody looks on us as a part of the welfare system, when it's America who's on the welfare system. They're the ones that started it by taking our possessions, by taking our land, our resources.
And Bill Means, Lakota founder of the International Indian Treaty Council and longtime American Indian Movement activist. From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Jacqueline Batiste. Supporters of the Indian Child Welfare Act, or ICWA, rallied outside the Supreme Court after oral arguments were heard in the Brackeen versus Holland case. The rally was organized by the Protect ICWA campaign, which includes the Native American Rights Fund, the National Congress of American Indians, the National Indian Child Welfare Association, and the Association of American Indian Affairs. Here are some of the speakers.
ICWA protects Indian children by making sure there is a priority to place them with their own family or other Native American families and giving the tribe notice that an Indian child is subject to a proceeding. ICWA does not, I repeat, it does not, notwithstanding claims to the contrary, prioritize unsafe homes over non-Native parents. That should be obvious from the briefs that were submitted from non-Native adoptive parents who filed on our side of the ICWA argument in support of the Indian Child Welfare Act. ICWA sets specific rules designed to ensure that Native children and families involved in child welfare proceedings receive culturally appropriate services and protections. ICWA has kept Indian nations whole and Indian children in tribal homes so that elders and tribal citizens can pass down their language and culture so that these children can know who they are and where they came from. It's no secret that tribes have not always been pleased by decisions from the Supreme Court of the United States, but all of these justices have expressed their intentions to follow the Constitution and to rule based on the principles that date back to this country's founding. If that is the case, these justices will rule to uphold the constitutionality of the Indian Child Welfare Act. To do otherwise would be to side with political attacks against the Constitution, against congressional authority, and attacks against Indian tribes in this country. It would create instability and chaos throughout the country by upending principles on tribal sovereignty that have been in place ever since the United States was founded. Indian tribes were here before there was a United States. Most of all, it would rule against the best interest of children.
My name is Charles Martin. I'm from the Morongo Band of Mission Indians near Cabazon, California. We are one of the intervening tribes in the Brackeen case. Morongo joined with our partners, Cherokee, Navajo, Oneida, and Quinault, to defend the Indian Child Welfare Act against the attack on our children and our families, folks. Thank you for being here today. We all came together. And they joined us in this amicus brief to defend ICWA, to defend something that was created by the legislature to protect our Indian children. And we are joined by our efforts by 87 members of Congress, 24 states, and dozens of most respected child advocacy groups in the nation. We will not go back to a time when our children were stolen and taken away from their homes. We will not go back to a time when we lost our voice and our power to protect our families. Mm-hmm. We do want to protect our families, don't we, folks?
Yeah.
Yes. We will not go back to the days of intolerance and policies of assimilation and that sought to sweep away our people and our culture. Where we fight to keep that alive, the dream. We will continue to fight for our future. We will continue in the halls of Congress. We will fight our ways through the courtrooms. We will fight to bring supportive services to our families. And we will see that our children remain close to home. Keeping our children at home is where they need to be. We will do as we always have, as our ancestors did. We will move forward to protect future generations. Look around you today and you see tribes united in making our case. Thank you again. Thank you very much. It's because we know the pain of the past. We know it. We've lived it. It's because we endured the suffering of our mothers, our fathers, grandparents, when their children were taken from them without reason. ICWA was approved by Congress to end these devastating practices. ICWA keeps children connected to their families, their culture, their tribal communities, and their heritage. Let's keep the dream alive, folks. I gotta say it. And we're gonna need your guys' continued support. This fight is far from over. Far from over, folks, and we need you guys.
Good afternoon, friends and relatives. First of all, I want to thank our Almighty God and Creator for bringing us together and for this beautiful sunshine that we know is eternal. And just as the sunshine is eternal and rises in the morning and sets in the evening, so too are the gifts that our Almighty Creator gifted to each and every one of us. And that is the gift of our children, the gift of our future, and the gift of sovereign tribal nations who have been here from the beginning of time, and we will be here until the end of time. When you look around this town, you see signs of our history and our tradition, because it was the native people of this land that introduced strangers to this land concepts of basic humanity, equal justice under the law. They built this country modeled after our culture, our traditions, and our belief in humanity.
100% true.
And not only are they here in this place, but we are challenged from contact generation after generation of trying to live one way and one way only, and that is as our Creator intended, to speak our languages, to live as our Creator intended on the lands gifted to our ancestors when time began. And every single generation we've had to fight this fight. And I'm telling you, spending 3 hours in this courtroom with the highest court of this land, the Supreme Court, and sit here and still feel that they do not get us.
Yeah.
3 hours of agonizing argument, agonizing questions, where they don't understand the basic concept that we have inherent sovereignty and we have inherent rights to the future of every single Native child born into this generation. That they somehow believe the interests of one or two people should trump generations of our efforts to repatriate and restore our lands and our people. We lost millions of our relatives over the centuries. We lost hundreds of thousands and over 15 killed on the Trail of Tears. And if you think about even just in our lifetime, the active effort to sterilize our Native women who are full blood, that was by design and with purpose to annihilate and destroy us off the face of this earth. But guess what? That didn't work either. rich and valuable culture that no other person can give them except Native people. And that is not a racial consideration. That is a political classification. Oh. And that is something that is necessary. This United States Congress saw it fit as necessary, but one tool to protect our children and to keep our children home. And that one tool is under direct attack, and we know that this fight is long from over. We know that for generations to come, we're going to come back stronger, more resilient, more determined, and we will not give up on a single child. We also know that the work ahead of us is far from over. And I just ask each and every one of you who are here today to reach out to your friends and colleagues. We have some more work to do in the United States Congress on addressing this case. I urge each and every one of you to get to know the strategies that we are doing. This time is so very important and so very critical. And I cannot leave this podium without saying this truth. We know that this case is so much more than our children. There's dark money out there that is strategically targeting our children, our natural resources, our sacred sites, in a way in which they want to continue to enrich profits at our expense. But we know that no matter what they do, we occupy a certain place in this life as Native people. We occupy a position of inheriting all that our Creator gifted to us. And there's not a single thing that any one of them can do to take that away from us. No legislation, no court decision. They can't buy their way into that. They can't regulate us. We are sovereign tribal nations from the beginning of time until the end of time.
From the rally to support the Indian Child Welfare Act on November 9.
Told us what to do and say, but they taught us all these white man's ways, but then they spit us up again, and they gave us gifts to ease the pain, sent us off to the foster homes, and as we grew up, we felt alone, 'cause we were acting white, yet feeling black. And one sweet day, all the children came back. The children came back. All the children came back. Back where their hearts grow strong. Back where they all belong. The children came back. I said the children came back. For the children came back. Back where they understand. Back to this mother's land. The children came back. Back to their mother. Back to their father. Back to their sister. Back to their brother. Back to their people. Back to their land. All the children came back. Children came back. All the children came back. Yes, I came back.
Music by Archie Roach from the 30th anniversary edition of They Took the Children Away. This is COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Jacqueline Batiste. Moses Brings Plenty is an actor and musician from the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. He spoke about our deep traditional relationship to the Horse Nation on November 4th at the Elders' Luncheon of the National Congress of American Indians.
I just want to talk a little bit about the environment and wild horses. And so when it comes to wild horses, I know that a lot of people have discrepancies because we want to make space for food, you know, meaning cattle and elk, deer, other game. But horses have an important role also for us because we as Native people, we did not wake up one day and decide, oh, okay, here's the language that we're going to speak. Here's the songs that we're going to sing. We did not create our culture. Our cultural identity was given to us. Our languages were given to us. And I say why languages? Because no human being is born with the ability to speak the moment they enter this world. None, regardless of how great. But yet, when a foal is born, it knows and speaks the language of its people the moment it enters this world. When a buffalo calf is born, it knows and speaks the language of its people the moment it enters this world. Just take a brief moment and think about that. That is a great gift given to them by the higher power, whether we call the higher power Allah, Wakantaka, God, Jehovah, it don't matter, it's still the same artisan, the same artist that created everything. And so it's obvious that our people understood and knew the importance of nature. So they turned to them and asked them, beg for help. Help us to be like you. Help us to become closer to our Maker. Everything, all of our songs, all of our prayers is all about honoring something, someone of the original peoples that have given us something to help us to become more in tune with ourselves because we are the representation of the earth. Our bodies, a high percentage of water is in our bodies. You look at the earth, it's the same thing. And so who represents water? In my culture, dragonflies. Who can call the rain? In my culture, the horses. Horses understand and know a movement that will help encourage the Thunder Being Nation to come and give life to the land. But yet, you look at society today, we are eradicating horses by the thousands. And as the horses are being eradicated and sent to Canada and sent to Mexico for slaughter, so is our opportunities and chances of thunder, the Thunder Being Nations to come and bring life. So we're starting to dry up. We are truly, honestly starting to dry up. We talk about water runoff. The only reason why water will not stay on the land when it touches it is because it is no longer soil. It is now dirt. And there is a difference between soil and dirt. So the water is going to run off. So how do we prevent all of this? Because horses also play a role in it. The buffalo play a role in it. And I know this for an honest to goodness fact because I live in the state of Kansas and the area that I live in is a large farming community where chemicals are used non-stop. I'm surrounded by farm fields, pesticides. And so we are continuously growing. I see in times of drought, I see corn still grow immaculately due to chemicals. So what I had to do is I rescued some wild horses and I got some buffalo, and I turned them loose. I asked them, do what you know how to do, because not every horse is meant to be ridden. Trust me, I know. I know. So I turned them loose, and I spent a lot of time watching them, because over 85% of our learning ability is visual. So I watch them. Every morning I go out and I sing a song specifically for the horses that is thousands and thousands of years old. And a song specifically for the buffalo that is thousands and thousands of years old. And as I was watching, I began to notice the movement. And one particular day, I watched the buffalo come up and all stand in a line. And the horses came up and they also stood in a line. And as they stood there, the buffalo took off. They looked like deer, moving so elegantly, looked like a dancer. They were moving. And they ran this pattern. They went over the hill and they came back and they stopped. And then the horses moved, same. They were dancing. And they came back and they stopped. They each of them did this 2-3 times a piece by themselves. And the last time, they all moved together. And so it helped me to understand when our people pray, what do? We dance. When our people want to honor and remember, what do? We dance. Every movement, every step, we're putting energy back in to the land as recognition that we have not forgotten. So they were doing this dance. I wish I could be a bird watching and see what pattern they are doing. And I'm even fortunate enough to have a horse that is a direct descendant from Sitting Bull's original herd of horses. We call them Lakota horses. And one day I was standing there with my nephew. There's the wild horses, there's the buffalo, and myself. We were all standing within probably a 10-foot radius. But there was a steel fence, of course, between us and the buffalo. And this direct descendant of Sitting Bull's original horses came up, and he was standing with us. And I said to my nephew, I said, Toshka, look around. You see them there? Tatanka oyatekia. Ashnaku lena. The horse nation and the buffalo nation. Ashlena Lakota Oyatekia. And us. I want you to understand this. We are truly blessed in this very moment. You know why? Because they tried to remove them, eradicate them, wipe them out. They tried to eradicate us, remove us, and wipe us out. Now, they are eradicating them and removing them and trying to wipe them out. I said, because I love life and I want the world to be a better place for you than it ever has been for me, I'm going to say that. That's my promise. To you and to your children. And so I look at it. Well, I'm an American Indian. I was told to be ashamed of that when I was a child growing up, but when I got home amongst my grandmas and grandpas, it was the opposite. I was told that I will never get anywhere in life by being an Indian, by a school counselor. Thank you for that. Because when that moment happened, I said, I'm going to be the best Indian there ever could be in this moment in time.
actor-musician Moses Brinksplenty from the Elders Luncheon of the National Congress of American Indians National Convention. Currently, Brinksplenty can be seen in the Yellowstone television series. Thanks to Cheryl Melendez for bringing this to CRD.
Horses, 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 running through the mountains, running through the rivers, running through the forest, horses, 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 running through the mountains, running through the rivers, running through the forest, horses, 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 horses. Sad na halen go, sotezi na halen go, ne jane go, ne jane go, ne jane go. Running like a prayer, running like a prayer to the sunrise. Nejoneko, 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 horses.
Eli Sakoti with his song Horses. Now from Voices of Resistance, a collective of women fighters, hosted by Lucy Paguada Quesada and Andrea Biseo from Pacifica's WBAI in New York, in conversation with Julia Sheehan and Jamal Shapur about Brazil's president-elect Lula da Silva. Julia starts by talking about Lula's first presidency in Brazil in 2003.
When we think of Lula, of course, internationally, I think people know him from the years when he was president, because he already had two mandates and he was a star in the international relations for Brazil. So even Barack Obama said once, he's the guy. So he is the guy, recognized by many, many leaders all over. But and in Brazil, we also know Lula from what he did in terms of social equality. So all the social programs that we had in his mandates really changed the landscape of Brazil. And for example, in the universities, I work at universities, there was a change that we could see in the color of our students. So in the most prestigious universities, historically, white people were dominated in a country where the majority of the population is not white. In the universities, what we had was a lot of white students. And with the social programs during Lula and Dilma's governments, we saw this change. So the Black students, the indigenous students, they were all coming into the classrooms and being present in university. So this is just to give you an example of what is Lula. But I'd like even to go back a little bit more, because I was reading his biography. There's a biography that came out last year, Lula's biography. And knowing also about his past, what he had to endure in his childhood. So he came from a very, very, very poor family in the northeast of Brazil, who immigrated to the south when he was a very young child. And he had to go through a lot of difficulties in his childhood, hunger. He ate bread for the first time when he was 7 years old. Can you imagine that? So, and then he worked in the industry. He went to the unions, and that how he joined the political activities. It was through the unions, and that's when he kind of started to building his leadership. So it's a man who shows what is kind of like we imagine it was impossible, is someone coming from a very poor family to become this president, international recognized that the president of the United States is able, has said he's the guy. So this is also what Lula represents for us Brazilian, is this possibility of someone coming from this very poor and background to be able to become president of the country and to shine and to bring justice for our people. This is also what gives us hope, because we've been through very, very hard times in Brazil. So it's with great joy and relief that I'm here with you today to celebrate the hope that Lula is bringing us with his election. So I think that's a little bit what Lula is to me, but I'm sure for everyone is different. He's such a powerful person that we all have our attachments and our memories.
Jamie, young Colombian American here, internationalist, Latin American.
Because he represents like the marginalized in Brazilian society of the Afro, of the indigenous, of the working class, and how he was able to defeat a neo-fascist candidate like Jair Bolsonaro, and demonstrate how the Brazilian, like his victory is a representation of the Brazilian masses and of Latin America. So this is not just a victory for Brazil, but also for Latin American and the third world, you know, when it comes to the Amazon, but which we're going to talk a little bit later. Because recently with the president in Colombia, Gustavo Petro's meeting with Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela also signifies a big time unity with Lula when it comes to the Amazon. But hopefully we could talk about that later when we talk about the Amazon.
Jamil, why don't you expand on that a little bit? Because this is a very important message that the world is talking about, the Amazon as an essential piece of climate change. So, you know, given you have the mic, go on, tell us a little bit more about these alliances that Lula, as the president, is already making. So talk to us.
No, so basically, as many scientists have stated, the Amazon is the lungs of the world. And the Amazon is something that also connects most South America. The Amazon extends from Guyana, French Guyana, Suriname, Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia. But the majority of it is in Brazil. That's why it's in Brazil seen more as the lungs of the earth. But under the presidency of Gustavo Petro in Colombia, one big thing he campaigned on was climate change. The president, the ex-president now, the president leaving, you know, Jair Bolsonaro denied. He said he also tried to argue with scientists, saying that they were wrong, that Brazil's not the lungs of the earth, that they're making this up. Of course, because he was in cahoots with illegal loggers, which caused a lot of the fires in the first place. Gustavo Petro also said about how he wants to create a summit on the Amazon, on, you know, to address climate change and to work together with President Nicolas Maduro and incoming President Ignacio Lula da Silva.
Claudia, what does that mean to the region?
He's already collecting support around the international community. And the European Union has shown their strong support for the election of Lula. And I would like to highlight something here that impressed me a lot as an evidence of this. It was during Lula's first speech, right after he was confirmed the winner, that he said that he will create a cabinet for the indigenous people of the Amazon and a zero tolerance policy for deforestation of the region by loggers. So this was such a strong statement that as a result of this, the Norway Prime Minister immediately announced that he will unfreeze his country's Amazon fund and will be sending $500 million to help Lula's government protect the Amazon rainforest in the future. So this is amazing how how strong is the impact of the election of this Lula da Silva? And if he can have such a strong impact in the Europe, in so imagine a region in Central, in South America. So we can expect a lot of more good things coming soon when he start his government in January 1st.
That was from Voices of Resistance, a collective of women fighters from WBAI New York. Thanks to Lucy Paguada, Quesada, and Andrea Biseo.
Noche subsiste, cambia la planta y se viste de verde la primavera, cambia el pelaje la fiera, cambia el cabello el anciano, y así como todo cambia, que yo cambie no es extraño. Lejos que me encuentre, ni el recuerdo ni el dolor de mi pueblo y de mi gente. Lo que cambió ayer tendrá que cambiar mañana, así como cambio yo en esta tierra lejana. Cambia todo, cambia. Todo cambia, todo cambia, cambia, todo cambia, pero no cambia mi amor, por más lejos que me encuentre, ni el recuerdo ni el dolor de mi pueblo y de mi gente. Y lo que cambió ayer cambiar mañana, así como cambio yo en estas tierras lejanas. Cambia todo, cambia. Cambia todo, cambia. Cambia todo, cambia. Cambia todo, cambia.
Todo Cambia by Mercedes Sosa. This is COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Jacqueline Batiste. From Pacifica's KPFA, here's Flashpoint's Dennis Bernstein talking to Bill Means, Lakota founder of the International Indian Treaty Council and longtime American Indian Movement activist.
What do you think about Native American Heritage Month? And we do also have in Deborah Howland, there's a now the Secretary of the Interior is an indigenous person. So you've got Native American Heritage Month, and there is a member of the cabinet who is indigenous. What are your thoughts about where we are now and those sort of changes, if you will?
First of all, it's an amazing that a young Indian girl can rise through the glass ceiling, through the racism, through the educational barriers to become Secretary of Interior. And we are very proud of Ms. Holland. Let me tell you, it's been a long struggle, you know, using the education of the system to rise within that system. When a lot of our people are still not even considered as members of this modern day society. We're still on reservation. We're still asking for the United States to live up to their their treaty obligations by providing the housing that they owe us, by giving us a cut of those minerals. I know we don't want development. We don't want the oil companies to destroy Mother Earth, but yet still, we need some of those treaty obligations to be met by the United States government. We just didn't give them the land or give it away. There's certain things they owe to all American indigenous people, whether that's in Canada or throughout the Americas, especially where we were colonized long after other groups in Africa, Asia, and around the world. And so if they would live up to their treaty obligations, we would be some of the richest people in terms of our culture, in terms of our educational systems we've built ourselves. We have tribal colleges. We got our own schools on the reservation. So these are things we just didn't lay back and wait for the white man to take care of us. We had to go out and survive. And so we're still doing that today. And everybody looks on us as a part of the welfare system, when it's America who's on the welfare system. They're the ones that started it by taking our possessions, by taking our land, our resources. And so the idea is completely turned around to we're looked on as poor Indians living on a reservation when we have three-fourths of all the minerals and the extractive industries, they call it, at the United Nations, where we have gone now outside of the United States government to bring our message to the United Nations. But this colonial society we live under, limited in our opportunities. I mean, people like Deb Haaland have been coming out of the system, but they could only go so far because they were in there. And sometimes they didn't recognize them as Indian people at all. We're recognized as the United Nations and other places where they talk about human rights, we're recognized as ethnic minorities. Or we're given other labels, such as populations. We weren't humans until International Indian Treaty Council and other indigenous people went to the United Nations and demanded that we be considered in the human rights issues of the United States, but also throughout the world. So we're still fighting for our rights every day, and the recognition of Indian Month, has been a long struggle as well. We used to have Indian Month started in Minnesota when I lived over there. And we had a governor even here in South Dakota that changed Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. And this was many years ago through the work of various advocacy organizations. So nobody gave us this.
They need to take a look at what's happening, wouldn't you say, with Leonard Peltier in the context of Wounded Knee, which you participated in and which led to the founding of the American Indian Movement. But they are still torturing Leonard Peltier for standing for all the things we've been talking about, right? Wouldn't this be a place to start? I mean, honestly.
Yeah, he's a well-recognized political prisoner by all of various international organizations, Amnesty International, the Human Rights Council of the United Nations, other various bodies that concern political prisoners. And so, matter of fact, there's a march going right now. They should be entering D.C. To bring attention to Leonard's fight for freedom. Because, he's almost 45 years, I think, now. And so he's one of the oldest lifers and long-serving lifers in the whole United States penitentiary system. And look at that. Here's a man who fought for his land, his people, just as others, such as Sitting Bull, Crazy Horse, Rain in the Face, all these great military chiefs did that as well, they stood for their people. And so that's the way Leonard Peltier is revered in our communities. But yet he's stereotyped as a murderer of FBI agents when they never proved that. Miscarriage of justice to the ultimate degree. That's Leonard Peltier's case.
That was Bill Means, Lakota activist. Thanks to Dennis Bernstein from Flashpoints, November 11, 2022. In remembrance of John Trudell, poet, actor, musician, and a powerful speaker, John walked on December 8, 2015. John was the spokesperson for the United Nations of All Tribes takeover of Alcatraz Island, which began in November 1969 until June 1971. He was broadcasting as Radio Free Alcatraz. From the Pacifica Radio Archives, here's John Trudell.
Good evening and welcome to Indian Land Radio on Alcatraz Island in San Francisco, California. This is John Trudell welcoming you on behalf of the Indians of All Tribes.
Written in books and in songs that we've been mistreated and wronged.
Indian people want the chance and the opportunity to handle some of our own affairs. Today we had a meeting with the Robert Robertson. Let me see if I can get this all out. Mr. Robertson is the executive director of the National Council of Indian Opportunity, which President Johnson created this council in 1968, I believe. And there are six council members on it. Well, that's a whole long story that I'll get into tomorrow, maybe. Anyway, Mr. Robertson is, I guess, the official that we'll be dealing with to discuss the Bay Area Indian problems, urban problems of the Indian people in San Francisco area. Here is the government saying, we'll help you, but we've got to do it our way. I mean, this is the same thing we've been through for a long time now. And it was starting to happen all over again. And I don't know, anyway, we voiced very vocally our disagreement with the way that they were running the show to start off with. So now it has been decided that the Indian people will elect their own representatives to meet with Mr. Robertson to discuss the problems of the urban Indian people. And this is a good sign. You know, we're starting to get things together around here. Pretty soon, I was reading another newspaper a little earlier this afternoon, and almost on every page of the newspaper, I noticed somewhere where there was a statement made to the effect that we needed Indian unity. And well, I think we're on the road to getting it now, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. And as for the island, things couldn't be running more beautifully than they are right now. Today, it's been rather rainy out. And it's raining outside right now. And somewhere in the background, I can hear children. So everyone seems to be fairly well happy. And contrary to all reports that you may be receiving, we are not falling into the ocean. We are not destroying each other. Everyone is getting along pretty fine, preparing for the big weekend. And I guess that's about all the time that I have. So this program was brought to you through the courtesy of the Pacifica Networks. And this is John Trudell, on behalf of the Indians of All Tribes, on Indian Land Alcatraz Island, bidding you a very pleasant good evening.
The voice of John Trudell, and you can find more John Trudell at the Pacifica Radio Archives. Here's Time Dreams by John Trudell.
Time Dreams. Our memories come from the earth and return to the earth. In the reunion, our pulse comes from the sky and returns to the sky. Reflections of ancient sunlight. Time dreams. in human form and reformed life in shapes of shadows, of industrially darkened, reformed humans in behaviors, morality decided by punishment or reward. Punishment or reward decided by obediences, willingness to believe, using the lie like a drug for the heart, silencing questions and feelings with answers of fear and doubt, taking the mind through trips, some self-pity, some anger, some blame, disconnected from time dreams, the medicine of dream time, encoded in the DNA of human form, spiritual umbilical cords inside human consciousness, dream time, a place of being, outside of us, inside of us, where we can unhide our hiddens, straight talk with ancestor memories, free without judgment, answers to questions and feelings. Dream time is part of our pulse, memories in the shapes of life. We are a part of that, the breath part. Our memories come from the earth and return to the earth. In the reunion, our pulse comes from the sky and returns to the sky. Dream time. A place of being, outside of us, inside of us, where we can unhide our hiddens. Straight talk with ancestor memories, free without judgment, answers to questions and feelings, memories in the shapes of life. We are part of that, the breath part.
That was Time Dreams by John Trudell. And that concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of our Pacifica sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by Jacqueline Batiste, along with Akua Holt and Polina Vasiliev. The executive producers of CRD are Akua Holt, Polina Vasiliev, and Steve Zeltzer. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on Twitter at PacificaCRD and on Facebook at COVID Race and Democracy. I've been your host, Jacqueline Batiste. Thanks for listening.